What is going on, everyone? Welcome to the Taming the Financial Chaos podcast, where we embrace uncertainty, we embrace the chaos, because we are working to establish control. My name is Matt McCoy. I'm a financial advisor and a certified financial planning professional out of Greensboro, North Carolina. The name of my practice is Principles of Financial Planning. You can find us online at principles with an L-E of financialplanning.com. That's principles with an L-E of financialplanning.com. For those of you who tuned in to episode one, I wanted to first and foremost say thank you and welcome back for episode two. I appreciate very much having you in attendance. I also wanted to say that if you did tune into episode one, I can understand if maybe you walked away from that episode feeling as if we didn't finish the job. And what I mean by that is we talked a whole lot about uncertainty. And I'm sure this won't be surprising to too many, but uncertainty doesn't leave us feeling as if we have a clear path forward. Now, to be fair, we also talked about control, and we talked about the simple fact that control, even though there's much more that seems to be outside of our control than within our control, the control we do have does matter. And just to recap, a quick example I gave was the investor who was expecting their account to grow to a certain amount after a year's time, but they never invested the first dollar. Looking at it from that perspective, one, I guess, way to understand control, at least in the financial realm, might be to say that it's all about the decision that we make to get a process started. So it's like our decision is the catalyst that sets in motion an entire chain reaction. Now, I would say maybe a key thing about decisions is I don't know too many people who make bad ones on purpose. So in other words, it's probably fair to say that whenever we make a decision, we want to make the best one possible. So if our control is the decision we make that serves as a catalyst to get a chain reaction started, and we're focusing and trying, or we want, to make the best decision possible, then the natural question becomes, okay, how do we make the best decision possible? Two things immediately come to mind for me, and I don't think this will be surprising to too many people, but the first thing I would say about making the best decision is that it's all about having the most well-rounded perspective possible. So being able to see let's say a decision at hand from as many different angles as possible. I would also say that in having a decision, that implies that we have options. That's the whole reason a decision exists, is because we have to eliminate something and include something else, essentially. So with that, it's probably obvious as well that part of making the best decision possible is understanding all of the pros and cons, or maybe the costs and benefits, of each of the options at hand, and being able to determine which of those is optimal. Without question, when it comes to establishing the best perspective possible and understanding each of your options, just in terms of their costs and benefits, let's say, the best way to go about that is through the proper financial analysis. And really, we're basically talking about engaging in the process of building a complete financial plan. And the simple reason for that is because it is only in that analysis and only in developing that plan that you will consider as much pertinent information as possible. So a quick example I can give you would be that of an investor. You know, an investor might make a decision, or an advisor might make a recommendation to an investor solely based on a risk tolerance evaluation. But I can tell you a quick story of how a client who had a plan actually had that exact situation play out, and the recommendation that was made, while it proved to be valid and legitimate because of the client's risk tolerance, the client's plan actually said otherwise. In this particular example, this client was retiring right before the pandemic. And if you recall, we had a bear market occur right at the beginning of the pandemic, March of 2020. Well, this client retired at the end of 2019, and we had previously put together a plan for the client, but when he sat down with us, he shared with us he had met with another advisor, and that other advisor solely based on a risk tolerance evaluation, had recommended a heavily risk-laden portfolio to him. But when I went back over the analysis with this client and showed him that allocating his funds in such a way, at least according to the analysis we performed, showed that it would potentially compromise his plan if a bear market were to occur, well, the client didn't find that too appealing. And he ended up choosing to go with a much more conservative portfolio. And I'll just simply say that his experience in going through that bear market of the pandemic was much different than had he gone with the other recommendation. So in the particular case of this client, it's like you could say that his risk tolerance was placing its foot on the gas just in terms of how much risk can or should be included in his portfolio, but his plan was putting its foot on the brake. But something I want to emphasize here, and I think this is a good opportunity to do that, is simply the fact that when it comes to, like, when we're talking about investing and planning, we have to make sure to understand they're not the same thing. So just because you've invested, that doesn't mean you've done, let's say, all the planning you should do. Investing can certainly, be a result or be a component of an overall plan. And so it could represent some planning you've done, but it is not the end all to be all. So if we're talking about a comprehensive financial plan, we're talking about some other factors being involved, but that's a discussion for another day. But the reason why I point that out, that investing and planning are not the same thing, at least in terms of how we offer our services, we certainly have clients who are only investment clients, or alternatively, we also have clients who are only planning clients. We also have clients that are both. So the point I'm making here is that you can draw a distinction, you can draw a line between investing and planning, even when it comes to the same individual. So in other words, the same individual can be a client of the same advisor in two different ways. So from that perspective, the client I'm referring to, who retired just prior to the pandemic, it's probably fair to say that as an investing client, he was a risky investor or he had a high risk tolerance. But as a planning client, he was much more conservative. And just in case the importance of me pointing that out is not self-evident, I think this is a great opportunity to just simply highlight that we can see the same decision, the same financial decision, from two completely different perspectives, solely based on the amount of information we have available to us. So now let's shift our focus a little bit and let's start talking about the practical side of planning. And where I want to start with that is I actually want to give you a definition for planning, basically a way to understand what planning is. And what I would say is, at the end of the day, and I don't think this is going to come as a surprise to too many, you know, financial planning is really just a math problem. Now, obviously, we're working with numbers, and that should, you know, be obvious enough just in terms of, you know, why I might say it's a math problem. But let me give an example of one of the math problems that we might have to work with planning, so you understand, you know, where I'm coming from on this. One example for those who are in retirement, right on the cusp of retirement, or at least thinking about, you know, retirement. One example would be Social Security plus income from investments equals retirement budget. I'll give you another example. This might be more applicable to, say, like a younger crowd. Maybe you've got kids at home, you're thinking about college planning, that kind of thing. So maybe our math formula in that situation would be something like 529 savings plus financial aid plus income out of pocket equals college expenses. Now, it might not have escaped anybody that financial planning involves math, and so therefore, it might not have shocked too many people that I might define financial planning as a math problem. But there are two things that immediately I want to point out to you that basically explain why I like defining financial planning as a math problem so much. And I think if we really take the time to think about what a math problem is or what a math formula is, we can develop a better understanding of what financial planning is. The first thing that I would point out about a math problem is that it tells you how the different parts relate to each other or how they interact. So, you know, for instance, the example I gave of Social Security plus income from investments equals retirement budget. Well, that formula tells you that Social Security and income from investments essentially work together, or they're complementary, something along those lines. And the way we know that is because it's an addition problem. So in other words, it's not like income from investments takes away from Social Security. No, income from investments helps Social Security in achieving the ultimate outcome, which is our retirement budget. The second point that I think is worth mentioning here is that there are several different ways that we could look at how we might solve this particular formula. For instance, let's start out and let's say we know our Social Security amount, and let's say we know what the retirement budget is that we want. So what that means is we need to solve for the income that we need from investments to be able to meet that goal, to be able to add to Social Security and achieve the budget that we want. So that's one way of looking at it. Another way to look at it would be to look at it from the perspective of assuming a certain income from our investments and coupling that with the retirement budget that we want. And maybe that presents us with the opportunity to decide when we want to elect Social Security based on the amounts that we will receive. The last way that you might say that we might work this equation would be to just take whatever Social Security we're going to get at a particular age, assume a certain amount of income from our investments at a certain point in time, and that will be our retirement budget. So in other words, it's kind of like having our retirement budget dictated to us. Frankly, when I have sat down with folks who have not done planning, it's this last approach to the retirement budget in particular that I see most folks taking. And that's fine. You know, there's not necessarily a right or wrong here. And by the way, that's one of the things that I like to say in financial planning in general, is that there really aren't any right or wrong answers. It's more along the lines of what is best or worst, so to speak, or better or worse, I guess you might say. So I wouldn't sit here and say that it's wrong. That's not the word I would use to take that kind of approach in allowing your resources, whatever they happen to be, to essentially dictate, you know, whatever your goal is that you're able to achieve. But I do think that if all of us were being honest, we would much rather essentially have a say in what our budget's going to be, or what our goal is that we're going to strive to achieve, as opposed to having that dictated to us. Because if it's something that's dictated to us, it might achieve what we envision for ourselves, but it also might not. And while you can certainly, I guess, fall short, you know, when you set a goal, when you dictate the goal, the outcome, you at least are working with some sort of vision. And another way to look at that would be to say that you aren't operating blind. Now, one thing that might be obvious, but I want to make sure it is crystal clear, is that if we are solving for a specific part of an equation, so, you know, regardless of whether we're solving for the timing of Social Security, the amount of income from investments, or our retirement budget, when you are dealing with a math problem, a math formula, and if at the end of the day, what a math formula does is tell you how different things interact with each other, then what we can say is whatever the thing is at hand that we're solving for, it is conditioned upon those other things. Something else that we can learn by looking at financial planning or thinking about it as solving a math problem is that there must be a specific process involved. And the simplest way to demonstrate that would be to take our example of Social Security plus income from investments equals retirement budget, and just simply think about the scenario where we're solving for the budget. Well, the formula, the equation at hand, it tells us what we have to do. We have to add Social Security plus income from investments, and that will give us our retirement budget. We can't do anything we want. You know, if the formula tells us to add, we can't go and subtract. We can't go and multiply. And the simple reason for that is because whatever outcome we get is going to be incorrect. So that in and of itself means that we have a specific process that we have to follow. And that's absolutely true in the planning process as well. And another way that we could look at whether or not the answer is right or wrong would be to look at it from the perspective of whether or not we have the best answer. And obviously the best answer will be the right one. So what we're talking about here really is at the end of the day, there's a specific process involved that will lead us to the best answers, the best decisions. So having established that there's a specific way or specific process of arriving at the best decisions, naturally the question becomes, okay, well, what is that process? Well, what I'm going to cover with you today are six principles. Now, these six principles are not necessarily unique to me or my practice. In fact, one of the things that I often say is, regardless of what advisor you work with, the look and the feel of that process might be a little different, but the things that guide or govern that process should all be the same. And the simple reason for that is that the fundamentals are the same. So if the fundamentals are the same, then that means the same boxes have to be checked. And the only difference on the way to checking those boxes is how exactly you go about it. But nevertheless, the same boxes need to be checked at the end of the day. So the six principles I've identified and defined that should govern the financial planning process are: number one, be organized. Number two, define the life you want. Number three, find your signals in the noise. Number four, know the rules. Number five, test the limitations of your resources. And number six, follow your plan. Now, I would hope it would be obvious, but I didn't come up with those principles at random. And just in thinking about financial planning and what goes into a solid plan, what makes up a solid plan, it became clear to me that financial planning shares a lot of similarities with the planning involved with, say, taking a trip. And I'm going to walk you through a little scenario to demonstrate what I mean. So let's say you are planning a trip. What is the first thing you need to know? Now, some of you might have thought to yourself that the first thing you need to know is where you're going. But let me give you a little scenario that will demonstrate why that's not the correct answer. So hypothetically, say I blindfold you and I drive you off into the middle of nowhere. And I say, okay, I'm going to drop you off and it's up to you to make your way back home. Well, if I drive away, what's the first thing that's going to come to mind? The first thing that comes to mind should be, where am I? So the first thing you need to know when you're getting ready to take a trip is you need to know what your starting point is. So in financial planning, if we're going to say that the first thing we need to do is define our starting point, what that really means is we need to be organized. And the reason we need to be organized is because we need to easily put our fingers on the facts and figures that we need to define where we are. I want to get into the reasoning behind why principle number one is knowing your starting point. But before I do that, let me go ahead and give you principle number two, which you might have guessed if principle number one has everything to do with knowing your starting point, then principle number two has everything to do with knowing your destination. So in financial planning, the equivalent of knowing your destination is to define the life you want. Like I said, I want to get into why knowing your starting point is principle number one. But the reasons that explain that basically also explain why principle number two is knowing your destination. But in order to explain why that is and give you those reasons, let me start off with some questions. So let's take the example of me having dropped you off in the middle of nowhere. And so it's completely up to you to get yourself home. Well, aside from knowing where exactly you are, if you are going to start walking out of the middle of nowhere and on your way home, well, what's the first thing you need to know there? It should be obvious, but the first thing you need to know is the direction that you're going to travel. And what do you need to know in order to determine direction? You need to know where your starting point is in relation to your destination. So if you don't know which direction your home is from where you are standing, you don't know which way you need to even start walking. But let's say, regardless of the scenario, we have the benefit of knowing our starting point and our destination. Well, just by simply knowing those two things, we can see how they are positioned relative to one another. So with taking a trip, that would allow us to establish direction. And in financial planning, it would allow us to understand a general concept like whether we need to invest. To illustrate the second reason for why principle number one is knowing your starting point and why principle number two is knowing your destination, let me pose another hypothetical scenario to you. Say you're on a trip and you've managed to get yourself lost and you happen to see a gas station up ahead. And so you pull in and you find a gentleman outside who's willing to help you find your way. Well, let's say that when you go to ask for directions, all the gentleman gives you is head east. Is that helpful? Well, yeah, it's helpful. You obviously need to know direction, but if I were to ask you what was missing from the directions that he provided, some of you might come up with distance being a key fact. And that's exactly what I'm trying to get at. But what I would point out that this highlights is fundamentally, whether we're talking about taking a trip or whether we're talking about financial planning, part of the process involves measuring. And if we're taking a trip, the unit of measurement might be in miles. But if we're talking about financial planning, the unit of measurement is obviously going to be dollars. So to sum it up, the reason why the first two principles have everything to do with knowing your starting point and your destination is because you need to determine direction and distance. And in financial planning, direction will correlate with a general concept like whether you need to invest or whether you need to buy insurance, while distance would answer a question like how much. So now we've arrived at our third principle, which is find your signals in the noise. Where I got that from, that particular principle, I stole it fair and square from Nate Silver's book that I referenced in episode one. The reason why I felt it was important to include this in our list of principles is because being able to sort through information, so either determining what is a good source of information or being able to determine whether the information that's been provided to us is pertinent to us, is very much an important part of making good financial decisions. I've certainly had the occasion where folks have come to the table and brought an idea or a topic with them that they read about online or got from a friend, let's say. And what they've been told has caused them some anxiety or stress. But it is absolutely fair and truthful to say that they skipped over the most important part, maybe, which is to first determine whether it even applies to them. And so through having enough of these experiences, it became pretty clear to me that to the average person, trying to absorb all the information that's flowing around us and filter out the good from the bad is a pretty difficult process. And frankly, sometimes it requires particular knowledge or particular tools to be able to sort it all out. Now, I understand if some folks might try to go about their planning on their own, and so they may not have some tools or resources to be able to help them sort through the information and determine whether it's useful to them or not. But that doesn't change the fact that this is an important part of what has to be considered. Now, principle number four is know the rules. And I suppose the fact that that is principle number four or a principle at all is pretty obvious. But it's probably fair to say that the real reason that I included that on the list of principles is that I have found that oftentimes folks are just unaware of rules that exist that could end up making what looks like a simple decision into a complex and or costly decision. So we might be talking about, required distribution rules. We might be talking about rules you need to be aware of in adhering to the stipulations of an insurance contract. I could keep going, but the point remains that it's important to understand what rules exist and which ones are applicable to you. Now, where I want to start with principle five is first explaining where it comes from. So the principle is test the limitations of your resources. And where that comes from is just realizing, again, through observation, but realizing that there are an awful lot of folks out there who feel vulnerable. And specific to finances, they feel vulnerable probably when they shouldn't. So another way to put that would be to say they don't realize how resilient they are. And if you are in a position, and we talked a little bit about this in episode one, but if you're in a position where you don't feel free just to act, just to make a decision, you know, maybe we're talking about, you know, making a particular purchase. Well, the reason you might feel that way is because you think, again, using the expense as an example, that if you lay the money out for that expense, it might compromise some other aspect of your plan. But if you haven't done the proper analysis or put the proper plan together to understand, to give you the facts and figures to support whether that kind of an expense is a good decision or bad decision, just in terms of what it means for your plan, then just the lack of that information can certainly lead to that kind of apprehension. And one of the things that I firmly believe, and I'm sure to mention whenever the opportunity presents itself, is that when we talk about financial planning, we're really talking about life planning. And if we're apprehensive about pulling the trigger on a particular financial decision, and so maybe we put it on hold, or we just put it off and we don't even deal with it, well, that really means that we're kind of putting life on hold. And the one thing that I want most from my clients is I want them to simply live. I want them to be able to live. I want them to feel free to live. And that means being sure to provide them with information that helps them to understand just how resilient they are. There are three questions that I will pose to folks when I'm meeting with them that help to demonstrate what I'm talking about with these concepts of vulnerability and resiliency. And the first question is, how quickly could you tell me the impact to your plan if you were to purchase a $10 million mansion at the beach? Second question, how quickly could you tell me the impact to your plan if you were to purchase a $3 cup of coffee at Starbucks? Last question, how quickly could you tell me the impact to your plan if you needed to buy a new car? How about if you remodeled a room in your house? Or maybe you had to replace the HVAC system? The reason I like those three questions to demonstrate these concepts is because ultimately what they do is they narrow our focus and help us to realize where we really have trouble in just simply making decisions. And the way that works is, you know, you think about the first two questions, well, they really represent extremes, at least to most people. And so the mansion at the beach, the average person typically doesn't have resources on hand to be able to afford something like that. So to say that something like that would blow their plan up, I mean, that's an understatement. Conversely, the purchase of a cup of coffee at Starbucks is also an extreme because most people can easily afford that. So you've got, on one hand, an extreme that can be easily ruled out, but on the other hand, you've got an extreme that can easily be ruled in. And if we're dealing with things where the decisions are basically easy, well, there's not a whole lot that we can learn from that. So that's where the third question comes in. And, you know, we talk about purchasing a car, we talk about remodeling a room or having to replace an HVAC system. The fact of the matter is, chances are good that we're going to face a decision, you know, something along those lines in our lifetime. Most likely it's going to occur multiple times. And my experience has taught me that when we get to that third question, most people freeze. And the reason they freeze is because there's not information that's immediately accessible to them to be able to know whether they can afford something like that or what the impact would be to their plan. Well, if that third question represents the type of decision that we're likely to face multiple times, you know, during our lifetime, and we have trouble answering it, you know, to the point that we freeze. Well, what does that mean for when we actually face that decision? How comfortable can we possibly be making it if we can't even answer it in what is basically a simulation? Now, I feel very confident that our last principle, follow your plan, it's probably a pretty obvious one. And it probably goes without saying that if you're going to go to the trouble of putting a plan together, you should probably follow it. But maybe the most important part to highlight is that it's your plan. So just to use our example of going on a trip, if we planned a trip, and let's say we plan that trip to the beach, but our neighbors, they simultaneously planned a trip to the mountains, do we care about any of their preparations or, let's say, the route they're going to take to the mountains? Is that applicable to our trip to the beach? No, it's not. So if we can say that someone's plan that they have for a trip or vacation is going to be specific and unique to them, then it's probably safe to say that we should assume the same about financial decisions and financial plans. And we could actually walk through each of the principles and use them to demonstrate why that would be, but I'm going to pick one to demonstrate this. And the principle I'm going to pick is principle number 2, define the life you want. And in picking that one, I've done so for a specific reason, and it's because probably a question that I'm going to be so bold as to say I receive more than any other is, how do we measure up compared to other people? Or how do we look compared to other people? Or how much have other people accumulated? You know, something along those lines. I think the best way that I can respond to that, and this is how I typically respond, is by pointing out 2 things. Kind of like what we talked about with the client who retired just prior to the pandemic, he made the determination that what ultimately mattered to him at the end of the day was his goals, his objectives. So the life he wants, where he's going to eventually end up. And it just seems to me that if we are concerned with our progress relative to someone else, and that's how we're gauging our own progress. So if we measure up favorably, I suppose, you know, if we have the same amount accumulated or more than someone else, then we might say that we have experienced or achieved more progress than the other person. But it also seems to me that the only way that could possibly be true if we also have the same endpoint. So in other words, we also have the same life that we're striving for. And I hope this is an obvious point that nobody needs to have made, but I'm going to say it just so I can say it's been said. I don't know too many people who want the exact same things out of life. The second point I would make here as to why asking how you measure up to someone else is not a good way to gauge your own progress is because if you are asking that question about someone else, well, how do you know that someone else is not asking the same question about you? And if that's the case, then what is it exactly that we are progressing toward? The last thing that I would say here about any process that's geared toward building a financial plan is that it shouldn't be a one-shot deal. So in other words, it shouldn't be something that you engage in just once in your life and then put it away because you're done. If for no other reason, just because there is so much that is not within our control, and so it changes in unpredictable ways, we need to sit down and be sure to evaluate our plan and update our plan based on the latest information we have available to us. And if you think about GPS, just to use it as an example, it does the exact same thing. And so it's that process, it's a constant reevaluation that it uses to make sure that we remain on the best route. And so think about, you know, driving on the road and GPS notifies you, you know, that it's found a quicker route for you. Well, the only way it can possibly do that is if it has run the simulation again, the simulation of you going from where you currently are to your destination. But in initiating that process, you didn't do anything. GPS did it on its own. So it's not like you went in there and you had to do something drastic like change destinations to warrant a second look at what you're doing, the route that you're on. It's just the simple fact that other things exist and hold the potential to impact your trip that GPS takes it upon itself to reevaluate what your options are. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Taming the Financial Chaos podcast. Just a quick reminder that you can find more information and resources about my practice online at principles with an L-E of financialplanning.com. That's principles with an L-E of financialplanning.com. I hope you will join us next time. And until then, take care and stay healthy. Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Lincoln Financial Securities Corporation, member SIPC. Insurance is offered through Lincoln affiliates and other companies. Lincoln Financial Securities and Principles of Financial Planning are separate entities. Lincoln Financial Securities and its representatives do not offer tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult their tax or legal professionals regarding their specific circumstances.